to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
Yes, you
are. Yeah, oh my God. Well, so Brian, you were actually at Web Matrix launch last week.
Yeah, I was at the Web Matrix launch, otherwise known as CodeMash, in the middle of Sandusky, Ohio, where there's pretty much nothing going on except for CodeMash.
They should have done that when the roller coaster's running, because Cedar Point happens to be, arguably the best place, amusement park world.
You don't have to tell me. I went there when I was a kid, but this is actually held at the Kalahari Resort, which is the largest indoor water park in North America.
But, okay, so a lot of work.
Yeah, a lot of work. I was hard at work. But in the evening, cut loose on the water slides.
What was the reaction of people Web Matrix? Because this is, you know, PHP devs, .NET devs, maybe some Java crazies.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
gotcha.
No, it was good. It was good. I mean, I think some of the professional developers that saw this, you know, they're looking at this saying, hey, you know, I've already got my way of doing things. But if you're trying to get into web development and you're looking for a tool that can kind of simplify that experience, Web Matrix is really great. And at one point, you know, looking around the room, I think we had, you know, people from all of the major projects represented within the community there, certainly from PHP, I'm drawing a blank now, but lots of really great names out there. So it was fun. It was a unique Microsoft product launch, so it was cool.
Cool. All right, so let's get into this week's news.
That's right.
Some of the interesting parts is we have the Facebook Windows Azure Toolkit.
That's right. So if you're building a Facebook app and you want to take advantage of Windows Azure as the platform for doing your back-end storage and you're running your application, this is a great toolkit to kind of help you bridge that link.
Link? What are you saying with link? Is this what link?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Link communication server? Or language integrated query? What are you saying?
And you wonder why I wasn't on the show for the past few weeks. Jeez. Clint, you can have your job back.
Oh!
So, push notification helper library. So this is another library.
By the way, that's part of his community service. So if you could not insult him that way, that'd be great.
Still wearing the jumpsuit?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So if you're building Windows Phone 7 applications, then you're probably familiar with the push notifications that you can have. So, you know, I've got a text message or, you know, my stock just sold. This is a library to help you enable those from a server to say, hey, you know, some event that we care about just happened. Let's push that out to the Microsoft notification service to send it out to the phones that we care about.
Yeah, kudos to Johan and the team. And, you know, this was on the Windows team blog. So good stuff.
It's the Windows Steam blog.
Yes.
It's all about Steam the time.
I love the Steam discounts in December. Gotta say.
Definitely.
Gotta say. So, Entity Framework. Use it?
I can't say that I've used it a lot.
Not around the house?
Of course, yeah, for side projects all the time.
Okay, yes, object-relational mapping. The umbrella is umbrella.hidden.
That's right.
That's the worst line of code I've ever written. Yeah. So this is an 8-part series, and a new framework.
Get up and running. Take advantage of it for web applications, right?
Good call. ASP.NET web form specifically. Mm-hmm. They do give you some links if you're an MVC developer how to use the Entity Framework. But the idea is for people that are using ASP.NET web forms that are looking to use Entity Framework, and Entity Framework being the thing that does object relational mapping, meaning I want to program against my database using an object model.
Right.
So customers dot, you know, where.
Speaking of link.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And be able to do those wonderful query set operations, have it all go back to the database. It does all the, turns your object model into SQL code and all that jazz.
All right.
Moving right along, Steve Sanderson has a project. He was actually working with a guy named Scott Hanselman.
Heard of him. He's a comedian, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Ah, he is.
Yeah.
He's the comedian of comedy. MVC Scaffolding is the project. So he actually walks through MVC Scaffolding, which is a project that basically gives you, you know, scaffolding. So it walks up to a data model, say a customer table, and it will spit out the view code for you to easily get started and customize. So, you know, if you're adding a new customer, it adds, you know, first name and then a text box, last name, text box, maybe something else that's a state lookup, et cetera, et cetera. It does all that stuff for you. It's not supposed to be the end product, of course, scaffolding,
right.
But it just helps you, instead of blank slate, it does all the connections and stuff for you, and then you can take that and customize it.
And then it gives your text boxes and other controls friendly names, which can, of course, help you when
sure.
you're maintaining the application, testing the application, that sort of thing.
I personally like the numerical text box 1, text box 2, text box 3.
Hey, I don't want to take that away from you if you like
okay.
that. You know?
Okay. Yeah, I'm on. I liked using Roman numerals, too, just to mess with people. Dimitri Leyland sent us this information. This is him walking through the This Week in Tech application for Windows Phone.
That's right. So Leo Laporte's This Week on Tech show, he basically built an application. Well, he didn't. Dimitri did. That consumes This Week in Tech, and then he takes you through how he built that. So if you're getting started with maybe your first Windows Phone 7 application, it's a great way to do that.
Yeah, so. And it seems to be pretty high ranked in the marketplace as well, because a lot of people like those podcasts. So even if you're not into the specifics of how we built it, mm-hmm. at least check out the app and listen to This Week on Tech podcasts.
Yep, definitely.
Portable library tools.
That's right.
Yeah, so the idea here, and Greg Duncan turned me on to this, but this is a Visual Studio Gallery. Now, it only works with the beta of SP1.
Visual Studio 2010 SP1 beta. Got it.
Yes. Yeah. You'll say it in your order. I'll say it in mine. So basically, the idea with this project, though, is you want to have a library that's portable.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I want my library to work on full.NET framework, but I also want it to work in Silverlight.
Okay.
I also want it to work in XNA. I also want it to work in yada, yada, yada.
Okay.
So this library is designed to help developers. And really, it's a question, you know, for people. Is this something that's helpful as opposed to doing the maybe if defs or checking out what version of a runtime you're on?
Mm-hmm.
Or like, hey, I'm in this environment. I should be doing this versus that. Is this something that's useful? Is this something that a lot of people do? And obviously, you don't want to do the copy-paste example. I think it's a pretty interesting project and maybe something that should even be built into Visual Studio, just simplify the lives of the world and to standardize how to do that stuff. But a question if people find this useful.
That's right. We'll wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll move along. We'll
okay.
move along.
Yeah, Derek, in the interest of time.
We're not live.
Yeah.
This is kind of embarrassing. Parsing HTML documents with the HTML Agility Pack. So Scott Mitchell mm-hmm. from Four Guys from Rolla talks about the HTML Agility Pack, which is, we've, I think, mentioned it on the show before. The big thing that I hadn't seen was a tutorial on how to get started. Basically, you see a complex project, doesn't really give you a ton of examples, mm-hmm. or at least, you know, at the time, doesn't give you a ton of examples. How do you download it, how to get started with it, and say, walk up to a web page, you know, your screen scraping. This is really for, you know, maybe it was that Twit example that we showed. If
right.
it didn't have an API, what could I do to walk up to that page and go latest shows and then pull all the hyperlinks to MP4 files or WMV files for the video sources and actually build my own WP7 client using it?
So you say HTML agility. I say intellectual property theft. Is that where we're going with this?
Yes, yes, agility, okay. baby. Yes, man. Nice, nice.
Got it. But no, that's cool. And there's lots of perfectly legitimate reasons to do that.
Right.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and we don't have to question it. We just have to download the code and take it from briankeller.com.
That's right.
And that's how we roll.
Actually, I'm .net. I couldn't get .com.
Oh, yeah?
But the guy's not doing anything with the website, so if you know the other Brian Keller, I'd love to buy that from him.
I'm waiting for Fernandez.com, the medical equipment supplier, to just slip
oh, yeah.
up, because I have that pre-order, buddy.
Definitely.
Don't you worry.
So S-Delete, this is a tool that was new to you. This is Secure Delete, so this is a SysInternals tool originally,
right.
and this is a GUI for working with S-Delete. S-Delete's a free download from Microsoft.com under the SysInternals brand, and I use this a lot when I'm getting ready to ship virtual machines, because what you can do is you can run it and it will zero out all the free space that's on the disk, and so that's
why
a nice
would you
way.
Want to do that?
Well, it makes it easier to RAR the image or to otherwise compress the image, exactly, if everything's zeroed out as opposed to having remnants of other files. But another good reason why you would do this is just for the security of your data. A lot of people, of course, know that when you delete a file, you're not actually deleting the contents of the file right away. You're just deleting a reference to that file, and that is a maneuver that allows you to go back and restore that file if you accidentally deleted something. But in a situation where you're getting ready to turn in your hard drive to, you know, your corporation or something like that,
is that what S-Delete is for in terms of what it gives you? I thought it was just like deleting specific files. Can you tell it to wipe an entire machine?
Sure. Yeah, you could do that. You could say sdelete all the free space on this particular drive, or sdelete all the files on this particular drive. So yeah, you have a lot of options. But the idea is that it writes...
I may need to do that a macro when you start up, when you first log in on any machine.
Just delete everything?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, why not?
Yeah,
yeah.
Because I'm sick of you restoring my delete star.star batch file.
You're just sick of me installing J-Sharp every time on your machine.
That's like a nightmare.
Yeah.
God, it's not even J-Script, it's J-Sharp.
That's right. Oof. We shall rise again. Okay, so query VS projects using T-SQL. Now, why would I want to do this?
So the idea is you walk up to Visual Studio project files. You want to, for example... Maybe it's maintaining a list of what are all our build and dependencies. Maybe doing some sort of reporting. So it's mm-hmm. like I can see, within our projects, I see all the reference libraries. I know kind of what's going in my project. All that stuff is, say, in a VB proj file or a CS proj file.
Which projects target .NET 2 versus .NET 3.5?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So you can imagine, having a big repository of all these project files, which are actually MS build files. Mm-hmm. This is a person who also lives and breathes inside of SQL Server. So I think there may be some easier ways, for example, to just do this via PowerShell mm-hmm. and commandlets in .NET code. This is how you can actually use it in T-SQL and use OpenXML for some crazy stuff.
Now, one thing I wonder about this is how far back in the Visual Studio project previous editions this goes. Like, can I query VB5 projects, for example, and get all that data?
Well, all of this is in querying the projects once they hit MS Build.
Oh, okay.
So MS Build was picked up in 2005.
Right.
But you may make assumptions because the MS Build XML schema did change within 2005, 2008. So maybe you'd have to do something if you can tell if something's in 2005.
Got it.
This is... We're going to rewrite this.
Yeah, I can see this being...
Live.
Okay, well, wait here. I can see this being really useful if you're maybe in charge of making sure that all of your applications are supported and not using .NET Framework 1, which I think that's already gone out of support policy, something like that.
Yeah, or, you need to report, like, how many of us, we have to remove a dependency on this third party, or we want to scan,
should
we upgrade all of our projects to remove a dependency on a third party zip library?
Right.
Because .NET 4 now has some zip stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe we should remove it. Well, how many is that going to be? Well, it turns out it's only 3 projects.
That's a good point. And that actually reminds me, who I ran into at CodeMash last week?
Uh-oh.
Was Sarah Ford.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And she's now working at Black Duck.
Yeah, she
Software.
Is.
Love
yep.
you,
and,
Sarah.
And so I told her that next time she's in town, we'll have to have her on the show. So she's
so
doing some stuff
doing?
That's actually very similar to this, where they'll go into an organization and help them understand what all the third-party libraries are that they're making use of, so that they can then say, okay, this one maybe has some licensing clauses which are not too friendly to you being able to use this and redistribute it to other organizations. And then what do you do about it? So it's perfect for someone like Sarah Ford, who's the self-proclaimed queen of open source. So it's really cool. We'll have to have her back on the show.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. Time for picks of the week.
Picks of the week! So my pick is Mark Heath, who's written some great stuff for us for Coding for Fun. His previous one was the Skype voice changer.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in a conversation with Skype, you can actually mask your voice.
Oh, you can do that now?
Yes, you can! Hi! My name is Billy. Want to play?
All right.
Every time.
Yeah.
Scares the hell out of Brian. So the idea here is he's used the core library that he built was another .NET project called NAudio.
Mm-hmm.
So he's taken NAudio and actually built AutoTune. And maybe some people are familiar with AutoTune. Maybe they're not. But it basically does this weird thing to analyze the pitch of your sound mm-hmm. and then changes it so that you kind of sound like... You really have to hear an example.
Hide your kids, hide your wife.
Antoine
Dodson, the poster child of AutoTune.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So I can do that. We can go back and do this to all of our This Week
I
on Channel 9 episodes.
I would love to AutoTune some stuff.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
This Week on Channel 9, AutoTuned. Boom.
So my pick of the week is Brian Harry post, where he talks about Urban Turtle, which is an add-on. Sorry, let me back up. My post is a Brian Harry blog post, where he talks about Urban Turtle.
Okay, Urban Turtle. I love it. Like you put a little behind your ear before you go out?
Exactly, yeah. It's an add-in for Team Foundation Server, and it's really cool. It actually integrates with Team Web Access and gives you a really nice dashboard for doing things like managing your backlog, so you can move, you know,
I wasn't familiar with this, but it looks awesome.
Yeah, it's really slick.
Visually awesome.
That's right. And then another thing you can do is you can work with, you know, if you've ever walked into a Scrum team and they've got a whiteboard that has all these index cards and it shows who's working on each one of the user stories and then where they're at with respect to test and implementation and deployment, then you can basically visually model all that stuff within Urban Turtle, and then all that information gets mapped behind the scenes within Team Foundation Server. So that's only...
So it's good for people working Scrum as well.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, or Scrum Butt, as a lot of, you know, teams like to work. And so that's really nice, but the other nice thing that Brian's been doing is he's been focusing on other Team Foundation Server add-ins as well. So one of my favorites is one called TeamSpec. TeamSpec allows you to take a Microsoft Word document as the baseline for capturing my requirements or my features or what have you. And then when you're done, like let's say you're my customer and we've figured out what the Word document should look like, you can automatically map all the individual components of that document into Team Foundation Server. So it knows this is a user story, this is a sub feature, you know, something along those lines. And then once people start making changes to that over in Team Foundation Server, you can then re-autogen the Word document and share the track changes back with the customer and say, hey, look, this is, I know we talked about this feature, but the dev team says it would be better if it was implemented this way. Is this appropriate? So it's another add-in. So take a look at Brian's blog.
And that one's name is?
That one's called TeamSpec.
TeamSpec, okay.
And then one last more I'll throw out there. It's AIT, I think it's called AIT Task Board.
And how much are they paying you for these?
Oh, yeah, I need to negotiate that. But AIT Task Board is another one that's similar to Urban Turtle that helps you do that kind of backlog management tool.
AIT
Task Board, I believe. I'll get you the link for the show notes.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Okay, so that is This Week on Channel 9. Thank you very much for our guest, Brian Keller, back in the studio. And thanks again.